Now, once again, here's Mark.
Hey, welcome, everybody. We're here to answer all your car questions today. And I just wanted to say...
Oh, you that, first?
Yeah, that okay. You can't fix anything except... Or you can fix everything except the crack of dawn and a broken heart. And as your granddaughter said last night, a broken banana. I don't know where that came from.
I'm Mark Salem. She's Renee Salem. She's been my sidekick for 40-some-odd years. It's been hell on me, folks. But I've been able to weather the storm because I'm a tough cowboy. Nevertheless, we're here answering your car questions for the next 2 hours. And if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. Quality Transmission in Tempe doesn't have different grades of repairs. They always give you their best effort. They're not the cheapest shop in town, nor are they the most expensive shop in town. But they do great work. 90% of their business, repeat customers, customer referrals. They're also a member of the Automatic Transmission Rebuilders Association, which means even though they have one location, they offer a nationwide warranty with all the other members of the Automatic Transmission Rebuilders Association. Quality Transmission has been in the East Valley since 1977. They haven't been here that long because they do bad work or they rip people off. They do good work, and they're very, very kind and very fair. I know you'll be happy that you tried them. And they drive your car and talk to you for free. That's an important consideration. Okay, yes, we got a text last night from our son that said our grandson Rex stepped on the pedal of the trash can and broke it.
Right.
And Lexi, who's almost six, says, you know what, you know, grandparents say that all the time. They say five, almost six, because they don't really know how old she is.
Well, she's born in June, so I know she's going to be six in June.
Oh, yeah. So nevertheless, she says, she turns to everybody there, and she says, don't worry, Papa can fix anything except a broken banana. And we don't know how that got to from a broken heart to crack of dawn, but somewhere along the line, there was some translation problem.
Yeah.
All righty. This morning, beep, 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 at 7:32 this morning on Channel 10, we have an automobile transmission repair shop called GBY Transmissions. We don't know where they're at. It was part of a sting created by the Arizona Attorney General's office. Evidently, the AG's office loosened a bolt in the transmission, and I'm not going to tell you where the bolt's at or what the symptoms are because I don't think that's important. And they took it to, I'm sure, quite a few shops. Well, at this particular shop, the diagnosis and repair was quoted as $1,000. When confronted, the owner said he wasn't aware his employees were doing that, and he fired all of them. That's a lonesome feeling. We've done that before, and that's a lonesome feeling.
Yeah.
Do you remember the guy that had the Chevron station at Mill and Broadway when we were first married?
Yes.
His name was Jack. I won't use his last name. And he fired his old crew that one day.
Yeah.
Well, all the rest of us that worked at gas stations in the area went and helped Jack.
Right.
And he worked the aisle, or he was working the bays, and I remember my shift, I was working the islands on his behalf.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always impressed that someone had the ability to just clean house from... And there's a long climb back to normal from that particular
RJ.
So anyway, he wasn't aware his employees were doing that, and he fired them all. Here's the last line. AG still fined him $50,000.
But do you think that that was the first time that they had been in there? I mean...
That's the question.
Yeah.
If there's been a problem, or perhaps maybe there's been a slew of complaints about this shop.
Exactly.
But $50,000 for a first-time offense, $50,000 kind of seems like a little bit of extortion. If you don't pay us, we're going to drag you through court for the next 3 years, and your cost will be in excess of $50,000. So pay us now or pay your attorney. I don't know if that happened.
Yeah.
I'm just saying... It would be nice to know more information.
Exactly.
It would be nice to know if this was a habitual guy that had, and maybe his Better Business Bureau record is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this has been going on for years.
Right.
And maybe they didn't believe him when he said his employees were doing that and he fired them all. But when you do fire all your employees, it makes it look like you're ignorant to the facts.
Yes, that's true.
It does. It makes it look pretty silly there.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, if somebody in our facility would sell someone a timing belt and the bill was $1,000, there'd have to be parts in there.
Sure.
we couldn't, it would be caught by the numerous levels of management
right.
that we have mm-hmm. where you couldn't very well tighten up the bolt and bid something for $1,000. And $1,000 is actually pull a rear wheel drive transmission out, reseal it, get all the leaks stopped and put it back in. That's right. that's $600 to $800, $850, maybe $900 in some cases, but certainly not a four wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, it's just interesting.
Yes.
Okay, real quick, was it RJ?
RJ.
RJ, we'll take RJ real quick. RJ, good morning to you. How can I help you?
I just didn't kind of help with the squeaking. And then I put some up around the
I think he's talking to somebody else.
Hey, RJ, grab the phone, buddy, because you're talking to me. And if
hey, hey, how's it going?
Good, good, good.
Hey,
Mark, go right ahead.
I got an 87 Camry that has a problem with the when I replaced the blade, wiper blade.
Okay.
And it's got the old-style little pin rod that you got to kind of slide in there. And I was wondering, is there a way just to replace the arm on that, or do I have to put the whole mechanism, new wiper system in?
Okay, well, let's talk about the specific words. If you just want to replace the rubber blades, then those are called blades. That's blade only. The arm has the superstructure on it as well. The arm clips on to that bayonet blade that you're talking about. You are right. far better off to get the entire arm assembly because we lose tension in the old ones, and they no longer push the blade on the windshield, which means the blade doesn't learn how to wipe left and wipe right. Therefore, right. your new blades won't perform admirably because of your arms have lost their tension. And I want to tell you, I was in a couple of auto parts stores just the other day looking for some blades because it's been snowing up at the ranch. And they had blades for my truck that's blades, not blades, but arms. Arms loaded with blades.
Okay.
From $12 to $50.
Oh, yeah.
And it's pretty amazing. I want you to know that I looked at the $12 ones, and then I looked at, like, the $18 ones, and I bought the pair at $18 for the two of them. I didn't think I needed to have ones that performed in hurricane winds and all that other marketing crap that they put on them. So I would put arms with blades, if I were you, and just shop all your options, because if you ask for arms or blades at the front counter, it's been my experience that oftentimes they'll bring you the top two, and you have to ask for the bottom two. So that's my advice.
Well, my problem is buying the whole, not just the blades, but the arms, but it has that little pin that you got to push in there, and it just seems like it's hard to, no matter what kind I get, it's hard to, for that that style. I was wondering if the way of changing that style itself, where it's hooked onto the whole arm.
Well, does the metal part of your arm have a loop on the end of it?
No, it has
an eye. It has a round thing with a hole in the middle of it.
Two little screws that attach to the end, and then you slide this little metal pin through the windshield wiper.
Okay. You'll be surprised. I don't know how old the blades are that you're pulling off, but there's going to, if you just take one of the old arms and blades in there, they'll match them up for you. And I think you'll find some new connections that will make you happy. So the answer to your question is there's going to be new ones, but that's the best I can offer you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, RJ. Speaking of marketing, let me go on my nitrogen tirade.
Oh, okay.
Is that all right?
Mm-hmm.
Nitrogen for your tires. Of course, nitrogen is, let's look at the marketing point of view. The marketing point of view. You know, they use, NASCAR only uses nitrogen. And your jetliner, it only has nitrogen in its tires. And the big trucks, they always use nitrogen. And my thought process about nitrogen is you, unless you're Rene Salem, you're not driving at 200 miles an hour like NASCAR. And you know what? They can understand sign language on radio, so you need to knock that off.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I don't know anything about, but I did hear a trip about you and Jim this weekend. So.
Well, we'll leave that alone. But aside from that, when you talk about marketing, you're talking about your cars don't do 200 miles an hour. Your car doesn't weigh 80 tons or whatever a big 727 or 747 weighs, and you're not hauling 80,000 pounds on your tires unless you're crazy. So using the, well, they do this, so you should do this, doesn't work. Okay? Now, in reality, I found an article that talks exactly in circles.
Okay.
He starts off with saying nitrogen provides a distinct advantage for your customers while working on the while at the same time working as a great marketing tool for independent repair shops as well as dealers to attract, incentivize, and retain loyal customer base. They want you to use nitrogen to keep them coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to fill your tires with nitrogen. We may charge you $3 to $10 a piece, but we may do it for free. But you can only come back to us.
Caller Neil.
We have to. Now, anytime you want, Mrs. Salem, you come in and we'll check your tires. And if they need to be topped off, we're going to use nitrogen.
And they charge you for that?
No, that's free. But you're locked to them.
Okay.
It's kind of like giving the keys to your gas cap to a certain gas station.
Yeah.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
What does that sound like? Okay. So then they talk about using nitrogen with flake tires is not commonplace on cars and light trucks, and is even less common when it comes to power sports, which is the quads, the side-by-sides, the Polaris, the Hondas, the Rhinos, all that kind. In fact, commercial and military aircraft, off-road vehicles, construction vehicles, and auto racing vehicles, and 18-wheelers all have nitrogen. Wow. And then they talk about safety concerns. And then you know what else? NASA. Can you believe this? NASA even uses nitrogen-filled tires on its entire fleet of space shuttles.
Oh, settle down. Simmer down.
And then they talk about using nitrogen can increase tire life by as much as 25%.
How?
But they never explain that. Then they talk about that the air from a shop's air compressor, guess what it has?
I've heard this, I think. Water.
No. What the air in my hand, what is it percentage of nitrogen?
Oh, I don't know, 85% maybe?
No, 78 to 90, or 78, 79, or 80, depending on who's saying it. But I've been saying it's 79.8 since day one. So I'll take the average of 78 to 80, right there.
Okay.
That's the air in my hand. Now, the machine is incapable of making anything better than 95%.
The nitrogen machine.
Right, the nitrogen machine. Now,
okay.
When you freeze pack meat, you have those little plastic bags, and you put the meat inside the plastic bag. Then you have this vacuum cleaner, and it sucks the plastic bag down, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Pay attention.
Yes.
So that's freezer packed,
okay.
Right? We can't do that to your tire. We can't suck all the air out of your tire and flatten it like a sandwich bag.
Right.
We can't do that. So there's no way. I've been testing nitrogen tires since they first came out, and they are all between 90 and about 94%. So here's the deal. I'm going to move you from 78 to 90 to 94. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about two other issues with respect to nitrogen and why you should have it in your tires. What they don't tell you is you already have 78% nitrogen in your tires.
Okay.
But I'm going to make it better. And you know what? They're going to last up to 25% more. So we'll finish the factual data that this has. And I know you can't wait, but we're going to have to wait. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by David, who owns IMM Auto Service in Northeast Tempe. He's been working on cars since 1972. And why would you choose IMM Auto Service, or why is it important they've been around since 1972? Is because they prioritize your work. They offer you to the penny estimate, which is how much you have to write your check for. They only do authorized work, and they're going to give you a great warranty. They have ASE Master Techs who work on domestic vehicles and imports, but they specialize, and I want to repeat, they specialize in Swedish, Italian, and Asian vehicles. So Volvo, Saabs, Fiat, and Alfa Romeos are cars that frequent their shop a lot. It's important to know that Volvo, Saabs, Fiats, and Alfa Romeos are different cars. Okay, they are different cars. So, it's easy to change the oil and filter. But when it comes to replacing the clutch on a Saab, it makes the biggest gray-haired technician kind of quake in his boots because it's difficult and it's different. So, if you haven't Fiat, a Saab, an Alfa Romeo, or a Volvo, you should get to know IMM Auto Service in Northeast Tempe, south of the 202, west of the 101. Okay, we're talking about nitrogen real quick. Let's take Neil, and then we're going to finish my tirade on nitrogen.
Okay.
Neil, good morning to you, buddy. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
Hey, I got a
2006 Toyota Tacoma automatic. And I, every time I drive my vehicle, my pickup truck, I go about 40 to 45 miles an hour. Once I maintain that speed, it feels like I'm hitting a cattle guard every couple miles. Where do I start?
Describe to me what the Prindle looks like on the shifter. Does it show like 1, 2, 3, an OD or something like that? What does the numbers on your shifter look like? Do you remember?
It's just it's an automatic. It just has the R, N, and the 3D.
3D?
Yes.
So, but does it have anything below or 3D? Below 3D, like D2, D1?
Nope.
Okay.
Just 3D, and that's it.
Okay. So there's nothing between the 3D and the neutral?
Correct.
Okay. All right. And when this is happening, the question is it a lockup converter problem where it's locking and unlocking the converter, or are we going in and out of overdrive? Now, most transmission shops will take it out and say, you show us. And so then you drive it and you show them what they're talking about. Then they're going to say to you, keep your right foot where it's at. And with your left foot, I want you to push the brake pedal enough to shine the lights, but not enough to affect the speed. And hold that position for another mile or so. And if it goes away, then we know that it's directly related to overdrive or lockup, which occurs between 40 and 50 miles an hour. So then the question is what is the computer seeing that's causing it to change going into lockup and then coming out of lockup, going into lockup? That's what's going on. That's probably what's going on. What part of town do you live in?
I live at 35th Avenue in Pinnacle Peak.
Okay. I would call Action Auto down at Deer Valley in the I-17, and I would ask Tom who he uses for transmission work. And I'm quite sure most all the shops in that area are going to drive it with you for free. There's no cost to get in, and you show them what you can do. And in your particular case, you can probably show it to them without having to get on the freeway. And just driving, you know, on Deer Valley or something like that. Just drive it and show them. But if you do that yourself and it changes it, that helps them immensely when you go in there.
Okay.
You've eliminated some diagnostic money. Okay?
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you very much. All right, back to nitrogen tires. Really and truly, with no nitrogen, or with no nitrogen in the tire, your inner liner of your tire, which is the thin piece of rubber that encases the inside of the tire, mm-hmm. you know that might not last as long as otherwise normal?
I didn't know that.
And let me ask you a question. You've been in this business as long as I have, for 32 years.
Yes.
Have you ever heard anybody in our organization, and we sell tires.
Yes.
Have you ever heard anyone in our organization say your tire failed because the liner, the inner liner, was compromised?
Never.
Have you ever heard anything about an inner liner?
No.
Okay. That, folks, is the biggest amount of bull you've ever heard in your life. They talk about it won't corrode over time. And then they talk about corrosion and moisture inside the wheel.
That's what I was thinking about. Yeah, I'd read about that.
The fact of the matter is that we sell thousands of tires, and we've never replaced a wheel that had moisture inside of it. We've never seen a situation. I will admit to you that when they put the sealer in there, the sealer causes corrosion and it eats up the aluminum wheel, the steel wheel, it eats the paint off the wheel. There's problems associated with that, but it has nothing to do with nitrogen. Mm-hmm. It has to do with the presence of a sealer in the tire that's been placed by somebody.
Now, we're in a dry climate, so would that be any different than, let's say, if we were in Seattle or somewhere like that, you think? No?
Well, that's a great question, and I wish you'd buffer those with me before you ask them on the air and try to embarrass me.
Oh, I'm
the
sorry.
The fact of the matter is we have customers with plates from Minnesota and Florida all the time.
Yeah.
We do their tires. We don't find water in theirs. And admittedly, in Florida and Minnesota and Wisconsin and some of those places that have 30% humidity, unlike what we have, mm-hmm. there's an issue.
Right.
So it depends on when you mount them and bounce them. But the idea is when we were in Ahwatukee and we serviced predominantly winter visitors, mm-hmm. we still never found any water in the tires.
No, we didn't.
So the idea that it's going to preserve the inner liner is crazy. The idea that we're going to eliminate moisture inside your tire is crazy. So then they talk about dealers. And they're not talking about car dealers. I'm not, you know, making a mess on their plate. I'm talking about repair people. Charge $3 to $10 for filling the tires, depending on the size. Some retailers offer nitrogen for no charge if the tires are purchased through them. They talk about nitrogen levels within a tire must be a minimum of 95% pure to be effective. I just got through telling you that when I'm testing them, the numbers were 90 to 95.
Right.
This guy says they have to be 95% or higher to be effective. So that means that virtually 100% of the tires I've tested, according to him, the nitrogen is not effective. Because getting to 95% involves somehow or another collapsing the tire like a sandwich bag, and we can't do that.
Right.
Then he talks from a sales perspective. Now pay attention to this, young lady. Using nitrogen to fill tires is widely practiced in other commercial settings, such as the aircraft industry, for safety reasons. It's required by the FAA and heavy-duty trucking industry. Those cost savings are tracked. What has that got to do with the price of cheese?
Yeah.
What has that got to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here it is. The real advantage, this is in the very last paragraph, the real advantage to nitrogen is marketing. So the real advantage is leveraging a service to encourage customers to make return visits to your shop is smart. And nitrogen filling services can provide many additional sales opportunities. The last paragraph in three pages of BS.
Yes.
That's the real issue right there.
Right.
Is hook them just like drugs and get them to only come to you for their nitrogen. And that's craziness. This someday will be recognized as one of the biggest frauds perpetuated on the American public of anything out there is the nitrogen. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Jeremy's there. We're here. We got nothing to do next hour. Call us. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, 602-508-0960. We've got Bob and Ron on the line. You're welcome. There's three more lines available. So if you have a car question or a comment, and you can take issue with what I say or what I think, it's okay. And I'm a... What are you laughing at?
Really?
You know,
really?
You're starting to make me mad. I control the button that controls your mic.
Oh, darn.
Anyway, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my friends Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Been in Phoenix since 1967. They do auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance. They can do emissions failures, and they have the equipment to repair it. Then they test it. They service and repair both foreign and domestic cars. Bob and Ellen, who run Larry Harker's Auto, can get your car running its best. 38th Avenue and Indian School, and I'm proud to recommend Larry Harker's Auto Repair. And to tell you that many of the general repair shops in the area fall back on Bob to help them with sophisticated diagnosis. There's nothing wrong with that in our industry. There's lots of shops that aren't good at diagnosis, and they'll farm your car out to another shop close by. That's normal. But it's kind of a privilege to be known as the go-to guy. So if you need car repair done, the go-to guy in 38th Avenue and Indian School and anywhere within a five-mile radius is Larry Harker's Auto. All righty, Bob, good morning to you. Bob, how can I help you this morning?
Morning. Hi, Renee and Mark.
Hi.
I got a new digital tire gauge for Christmas.
Okay.
So when I check my wife's tire pressure on her own Equinox, you know, in Scottsdale in the morning, when it's like, say, 45 degrees, and I set them for 37, because I know you say you should always, you like them a couple pounds above what the door sticker says, and the door sticker says 35.
Okay. Okay.
So I set them for 37. When she's driving to Tucson at 1 in the afternoon on the sunny side, and then her onboard tire thing, her TPMS, it's saying 41, and then she's telling me her tires are overinflated.
What are you shaking your head for, Renee?
Well, that happens. I know it does.
It does happen. It does. And as a matter of fact, I took a ride with a friend of mine down to Hereford, Arizona to measure an accident scene on Thursday. And the Corvette I was driving, which is my Corvette, it popped three of the four lights on at 43. And when I looked, the one tire that wasn't popped up on my TPMS screen was at 41. So let me tell you that the range on your TPMS is usually about 3 or 4 pounds above and below that number, that 37. So what's happening is by you adding 2 or 3 pounds, you're knocking the high end off. What you do is ask her to tell you what the other tires were at based on her TPMS analysis of the numbers that she can pull up on her screen. And then you're going to drop – this is what I did. When I came back to the office, I said to staff, would you please drop the temp – or after the tires cool off in the Corvette, drop them by 3 pounds. That puts me underneath that stupid threshold, and I don't have any lights on. That's what you need to do too. So maybe drop 2 pounds off of all of them on cold pressure. And then if she doesn't have any overpressure lights, there's no harm, no foul. And I also want to tell you, if it goes into overpressure, as long as it's within 5 pounds of what it's supposed to be, that didn't concern me. So when Jim, the guy that was with me, was driving my Corvette at supersonic speeds, even though we were overinflated in 3 of the 4 tires, I wasn't concerned. I was praying, but I wasn't concerned. Okay?
Do you think nitrogen mitigates that fluctuation from cold to hot?
No. No, they'll tell you flat out it doesn't do that. When you warm up nitrogen or oxygen or carbon dioxide, it swells. All of it gets – everything gets bigger when it gets hot. So, no, nitrogen's not going to fix your problem. Your problem really can be fixed a couple of different ways. You can find somebody who can reprogram that spread. Now, we do that on some cars, but I can't do a Toyota. But we do that on some cars. We'll go in, and let's say the spread is – it's a 7-pound spread, so it's 30 to 37. And I need it to go to 38. So now I'm going to move it up to 33 to 40. And I can move the spread. Sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. But in your particular case, just drop them a few pounds. If that thing's running pretty close to 40 PSI when it's hot, that's perfect for that car. Especially, and don't forget, it's designed to run well past the high mark, the high water mark. So people say, well, you know, they want 35, but it runs 40 when it's hot. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay that it runs 40. Right. They've got that designed in the tire. Okay?
1 minute.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Ron, you're up next. Ron, how can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I have a 2000 Chevy Silverado, 5.3, 160,000 miles. Have a condition that only shows itself in the morning when it's cold. Took it into the shop in the afternoon. The next morning they started it, called me and said, yeah, it's low oil pressure. Put a new oil pump in. Next morning I started it up, and I still hear that tap about 30 seconds into starting it. What do you think?
Well. I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to tell you what I think. The noise is still there. There is no fix. You spend a lot of money, but there's an O-ring issue that's in front of that oil pump, and I think that's the problem. We'll be back right after this. Stay there. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to go till noon today talking about car repair questions and problems. Ken's on the line, and we've got open lines at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. 4 lines are open. You're welcome to give us a call. Let me finish with Ron, and then you need to remind me about this right here. Okay. Ron, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I don't know what's wrong with your car. But I'm going to give you the question to ask. I want you to picture the very bottom of the engine, and the oil pump is typically in the back of the engine closest to the firewall. In your 5.3, I am pretty sure that there is a pipe from pumped pressure oil that goes forward and goes up. Now, it also, and I'm trying to think and I can't quite picture it, nevertheless, there's an oil line that goes to the front. It may be feeding from the pump. It may be coming into the pump, or it may be feeding from the pump. I don't know if it's pressurized or suction. I don't know. But there's an O-ring up there, and that O-ring is typically the problem. And the way you diagnose that is you overfill the engine for a day or two with maybe 2 quarts of oil. You don't take it out on the highway. You just drive it. If we overfill it with engine oil and it's a suction O-ring connection, then we raise the oil level above that connection, which means we will have good oil pressure first thing in the morning. And if you fill it up that far, and then you start it, and there is no clatter, and then we drain the oil down to 5 quarts, and the next morning you do have a clatter, then clearly the O-ring is bad. And that is a very common problem. You can do 5.3-liter GM, Google that, an oil pressure problem, and you're going to find lots of drawings and stuff about that O-ring. The question I would ask him is did you do any other work other than to replace the oil pump? And if they say, no, that's all we did, then the question is, well, you didn't fix it. I did a little internet research. Why don't you do a little bit of internet research and see if maybe we need to pull the pan down and maybe replace some O-ring I'm reading? You don't want to tell them, and you don't want to diagnose it yourself. You just want to point them in that direction. Under the best of conditions, the shop's going to recognize they should have put that O-ring in there. They're going to drop the pan at their expense, put that O-ring in there. That will fix the problem, and then they'll shake your hand and tell you they're sorry, hopefully.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck to you, Ron.
Thanks, Mark.
You bet. Ken, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. I've got a 2000 Chevy Express van, 2002. I wanted to check ball joints and tie rods, and I'm wondering, do I jack up the van? Do I leave it on the ground? What do I grab? This is all preventive maintenance. There's okay. Nothing wrong with the tires or steering.
Okay, well, if you don't have a click-click noise as you go left and right with the steering wheel while you're driving it, if you don't have any unusual tire wear issues specifically on the inside edges of both front tires or an aggressive wear on the outside edge of both tires, aggressive, I say, it's normal for your Chevy van to have a little bit of wear on the outside edge of the front tires because they lean over when you turn right and turn left. So I'm saying
right.
More than aggressive. Then why are you doing it if you don't have any of the symptoms?
It's, like I said, just preventative maintenance. I'm taking a long trip, and I wanted to make sure the steering, everything was right.
Okay. Well, if you're going to jack it up to check the ball joints, you're going to jack up the lower control arm. Okay? That's where you're going to put your jack, not on the frame or the center, but on the lower control arm. And you're going to take the top of the tire and the bottom of the tire, and you're going to pull and push, pull and push, pull and push. And you're going to have, at the same time, somebody's looking at both the top and the bottom ball joints, if you have two of them. And they're going to look for synchronization. So we don't want the top of the ball joint to be going left and right and the bottom not moving, or there's a delayed activity between the two. With respect to the tie rod ends, if you get your wife or somebody to start the thing up and make sure that the parking brake is on and it's in park, they take the steering wheel, put their hand at 12 o'clock, and they go left about the width of your hand, which is, what, 3 or 4 inches. Then they go back to center. Then they go right. Meanwhile, and they don't do anything more than that. Just center, left one width of your fist, back to center, right one width of your fist, back to center. They put you crawl underneath it, and you put your hand on the top and the bottom of the tie rod end, and you close your eyes, and as they move back and forth, if those two components, the top and the bottom of the tie rod end, move in complete synchronization, that's perfect. If there's the top moves and then the bottom moves, then the top moves and then the bottom moves, that's a bad tie rod end. Okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. I like Kurtz. I like all my shops. But Kurtz is special because he's made me a hero more times than you can imagine. I've sent people to him that I thought were going to be difficult diagnostic procedures, and Kurt made it look pretty simple. Kurtz is at I-17 and Bell Road. He's on the northeast corner. He has ASE-certified technicians. And just recently in 2015, he was awarded the Better Business Bureau Ethic Award in his category. And that says a lot. Kurt will work on foreign and domestic cars. And if he's not the best shop for your car, he'll tell you who is. So if you live anywhere near I-17 and Bell and you don't have a garage, may I suggest Kurt's Automotive, northeast corner of I-17 and Bell. If you want to measure another shop against the shop that you have, Kurtz would be a good one. After an oil change with Kurtz or after having him change your windshield wiper blades, you'd be able to tell if what the differences is between your shop and Kurtz. And maybe Kurtz win and maybe he doesn't, but he'll still be in the top 20%. I can guarantee you that. That's Kurtz Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell. Have you got anything that you want?
Caller David.
David, good morning to you. How are you today? What can we do for you?
Good, Mark. How are you doing?
Good, good.
I have some general questions for you. I just purchased a
for restoration, a 77 Pontiac Can-Am.
Okay.
Some of those concerns I have, a lot of the vacuum lines off the carburetor and a lot of the HVAC vacuum lines are missing, so I don't really know offhand where they go. One problem I'm having with the carburetor, it never wants to, on a cold start, it just keeps idling high constantly. If I kind of fiddle with the butterfly on a carb, it'll kind of go down, but then it'll want to die.
Stop. It doesn't, all of those symptoms, you can't start attacking those symptoms until you get it plumbed right. Because we're going to have vacuum to what we call the choke pull-off. We're going to have vacuum to pull warm air through the hot air tube through the choke housing. We need vacuum for that. We have to have the right vacuum to the distributor, whether it's ported or manifold, and those are two different kinds of vacuums. So we have to have all that there. You might look underneath the hood, on the underside of the hood. Sometimes in 70s, we put a vacuum diagram there. But I want to tell you that what you're asking on a scale of 1 to 10, there's a heck of a lot of gray-haired guys in this community that know that vacuum diagram by heart. They know exactly where everything should go. So we know that behind this four-barrel carburetor or two-barrel, whichever you've got, we know that there's a big port, and one of those ports is going to go to your HVAC, and one of them is going to go to your brake vacuum booster. We know all that, and we know the difference between ported vacuum and manifold vacuum, and we know the EGR needs ported vacuum, not manifold vacuum, so we know all that. But if you have a shop that you have a relationship with, just go ask them if they'd print out a plumbing diagram for you, and then you can do it yourself. But when you're fiddling with the choke, when you fiddle with the flap, what you're doing is you're kicking the fast idle cam off. When you open the flap, it shuts the fast idle cam, and then the idle goes down to nothing. When it goes down to nothing, if it's cold, it dies. The question that begs to be answered is the choke pull-off opening up the flap, and do we have a heated element that's working so as the engine warms up that we're actually going to open that choke someday? Those are all pretty simple things for guys like me with gray hair. I mean, we were born and raised on those cars. So what you're asking isn't difficult. I would imagine to plumb it and put it right, most shops might charge you, I'm going to say, the labor rates in my general area are between 70 at a tire store, which probably wouldn't have the appropriate person, but on the short side, 105, and on the top side, 145 in our general area. I know I'm at 112, and our average in the area is 116.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out, it's an hour and 15 minutes. What are you looking at me like that?
You kind of bid low sometimes, but yeah,
okay.
It might be a little bit more than that.
Okay, then give me 1 to 2 hours.
I would say.
All right, but I'm quite sure it's not 2 hours. To replumb it, really and truly. Okay, all right.
You're so smart.
All right.
Not everybody's as smart as you.
Okay, so you want me to open the window up to 1 to 2 hours.
Yeah,
all right, so from $100 to $200 to have somebody replumb it, and they should be able to give you all the vacuum hose for that kind of money.
Yes.
And they should do a good job. And they should then, on top of that, will be a choke adjustment, a fast idle cam adjustment, a choke pull-off adjustment, and to verify the EGR's working. And if the EGR's working when it's warmed up and idling, you push your finger underneath the EGR valve, you open it up, and the engine should die or almost die. And then when you let go, it should spring shut, and the engine should return to a good normal idle. And if that happens when you do that to the EGR valve, that system is working perfectly. So have you got any other issues you want to talk about?
Wondering if getting like a shop manual, like a GM Pontiac shop manual, just to kind of, you know, see more about the car and more about the engine and stuff. Now,
a GM manual won't help you because it's going to be a wide variety of cars. I know that there are going to be shop manuals for your 77 Pontiac. Just for that specific, and if the year of, let's pretend that 76 and 78 or 76, 77, and 78 are all the same, just Google shop manual for your 77 Pontiac, and you'll probably find some guys that want to sell those. And the answer would be yes. But to get a General Motors shop manual, first of all, you're not going to find one at General Motors anymore because that car is pretty old. You might also try Helm, H-E-L-M, Inc., I-N-C, .com. That's where I get all my owner's manuals for cars, old cars, and I can usually find new ones there. They might also have shop manuals. I'm not quite sure. But I do have software that I spend almost $800 a month to own, and that software will have all the torque specifications and everything specific for your car. And if you were my customer, and if you had patronized our shops for years, and if I got to see your car every once in a while, and you came in and asked me for the plumbing diagram, I know I wouldn't charge you for it. I'd print it out and hand it to you.
Okay.
All righty?
Okay.
All right, and one last thing. If you're going to hire somebody, what part of town are you in?
Well, I'm in Goodyear. My other question is, I was on your website at your best shops in town as far as engine rebuilding. Okay. It has the Oldsmobile motor in it. But I don't want to just stick another motor. I want them to rebuild that matching numbers motor. So do most of your shops do rebuilding as far as just rebuilding the same motor?
No. They don't do the rebuilding. There are a very few machine shops left in town that will actually do that. So we do the R&R. We take it out. We take the sheet metal off of it, which is the timing cover, the two valve covers. We take the intake off of it and the oil pan off of it. We ship it to them. They're the ones that mic and grind the crank. They're the ones that put new pistons in it, and they build the long block. They do the valves. They do everything. You get your motor back with new valves, new springs, whatever cam you want, crankshaft all brand new, bearings, all that kind of stuff. Then they put it in. Your warranty is with the shop. You didn't hire the machine shop. The shop did. So your warranty is with the shop. If you want to talk to somebody, your best bet on your side of town would be Mike's Auto Tech in Glendale. Mike's Auto Tech in Glendale. He would be the first guy I would go talk to if you want to have your motor rebuilt and you want to keep it the original numbered motor. Mike's capable of making that happen. That's going to cost you $4,000 or $5,000, but that's going to, and that's hoses and belts and oil and all the parameters. And I've got sales tax, shop supplies, environmental charges. I've got the machine shop charges. I've got, all the gasket sets, in and out kind of stuff. Write your check, but it's going to be $4,000 or $5,000 unless you're asking for chrome something or high performance intake and you want to add headers to it. Then that's going to add bucks to it that I don't have in my money. I got to go, but thank you very much. 602-508-0960. Open lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute.
And settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We got another hour to go. Let me tell you about Quality Transmission real quick. Quality Transmission is on our list of best car repair shops, and he actually is the only transmission shop in the East Valley that I can recommend. And this is why. Recommending a shop, there's a huge risk associated with that. And my risk is $5,000 because I say on my website that if you have a problem with one of my shops and the Better Business Bureau asks the shop to either make a refund or fix your car and the shop refuses, I will. So there's a risk. There's lots of transmission shops out there, but I want to tell you that in my opinion in the East Valley, Quality Transmission is without a doubt the very best one. Quality Transmission understands what it takes to diagnose a car. They are going to give you different options for whether it's repair of the car, good, better, best kind of stuff. And obviously, pricing goes with good, better, best. So we all know what it feels like to be taken for a ride, and that's something that won't happen. At Quality Transmission in Tempe, they're going to give you honest answers about your transmission problems and repair. So Bob or Steve at Quality Transmission, give them a call. They're located at McClintock, north of University in Tempe. Okay, put your headset on now while you're making all that noise and your glasses just fell on the floor. Oh, my God. Can you hear that, Jeremy? Can you hear her making all that noise with her headset on?
Yeah, what is all that racket?
That was you.
Welcome back.
Hello.
Hello. All righty, let's go to the phones. Mark is up first. Mark, how can I help you today?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2010 Silverado half ton.
Okay.
And I can feel a shudder, not a shimmy, when through the gas pedal and the steering wheel.
Okay.
When I'm driving on a less prevalent paved road, when the texture of the road changes, I can feel it.
Okay.
I've had the front end alignment checked, and it was okay. I had a what they call the force wheel balance, and I still have the problem.
Okay. Has any technician ever sat in the car and taken a drive with you and says, yes, that's something that needs to be repaired, or that's something that is definitely deficient?
Well, let me back up a little bit. I put new tires on it before this occurred, and I bought it from probably the largest tire dealer in the country.
Okay.
And they were very good about it, but they didn't drive it. I asked them to drive it. They didn't drive it. They did the test, and I took it back to the dealer, and they have the front end alignment.
This doesn't work, Mark, because you can talk for the next 10 minutes about everybody who's tried and didn't. Okay? I'm interested in only symptoms. The fact that you're talking to me indicates it's still not fixed to your satisfaction. And so for us to I did notice that you said, I took it in for an alignment. Men have a bad habit of coming into my shop and telling me to align their car. And I do what I'm told. Then they come back to me and say, well, you didn't fix it. And I say to them, you never gave me anything to fix. You diagnosed it as needing an alignment that's going to fix your phantom problem. Therefore, I do the alignment. Now, all of a sudden, I have to pay for your bad diagnosis because you want a refund on the alignment because your diagnosis on the alignment didn't fix the alignment. That's whatever it is. So let me ask you a question. What pressure are you running in your tires? Do you know that?
35.
Okay. What does the door sticker say?
It gives a range, and I don't remember exactly what it was.
Okay. Because 35 is going to be the maximum inflation on that tire, I'm pretty sure. And I'm pretty sure that the door sticker is not going to show a range, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to show 35. However, that's part of the diagnostic process. I can't tell you what's the matter with your car because you've had a road force done. Now, road force has generation 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I'm proud to tell you that I have generation 4. We just bought it. And we just had it installed maybe a week ago. And this road force balancer, it makes my old one look like Fred Flintstone versus Bill Gates with respect to computerized and phenomenal, phenomenal capabilities. But I'm not ready to say that this new road force balancer is going to be the answer to your problem because I need more from you. I need data from you. So I want you to drop the air pressure down to 30 pounds, and I want you to go drive it on the same road. Then I want you to put it back up to 35 pounds and go drive it on the same road. And then I want to know when you turn the steering wheel left and right, when this vibration on the throttle and on the steering wheel is happening, I want to know if the vibration goes away on a gentle left turn or a gentle right turn. And I want to know what speed we're talking about because that's the diagnostic process. Once I get all of that, I can determine if you've got a loose front end. I can determine if your stabilizer shock is bad. I can determine if your sway bar bushings are causing a problem. I can determine if your motor mounts are bad, causing the engine vibration to come up through the dash, come up through the throttle, come up through the steering wheel. So that's how it happens. So just having it aligned, you don't fix vibrations with alignments. The only thing that you fix with alignments is abnormal tire wear or pulling left and right. That's the only thing an alignment fixes.
Was the problem there before you put the tires on?
He said no. He said before.
No,
said,
it wasn't.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen, right after I had the tires. So.
Okay. Now, how many miles are on it since the tires were put on?
About 2,000 miles.
Okay. What I would also do is I, at their expense, pull in and just say, humor me, boys, cross the front tires for me. Take the right front, put it on the left front, put the left one on the right front. This is a diagnostic process that I want to entertain, so you swap them. And if that changes it, then we know it's tire-related. If it makes it worse, it's tire-related, and it's likely to make it better. It's possible that you have an all-season tire. It's possible the tire is scalloping, which means there's a little bit of uneven wear on the tire. It's possible by changing the rotation, we change the scallop, we change the direction of travel. Otherwise, the driver's side tire is rotating in a directional manner, but when we move it to the right front tire, it rotates backwards at that point. And your tires on your half-ton Silverado are not going to be directional, so changing the direction of the rotation is perfectly okay. So let's cross them and let's do that air inflation. Then get back with me, because
now you're talking cross the just the front,
just the front. Because okay. You're saying it's in the steering wheel and in the throttle pedal, and any vibration in the back of that Silverado is going to shake the butt, your butt. It's going to shake the seat next to you, and you're going to feel it in the seat of your pants. But it's not going to be in the steering wheel, and it's not likely to be in the throttle pedal. So that's why I'm leaving the back out of it. I'm working off your symptoms.
Okay.
Let me know. And you can get hold of me at mark@marksalem.com if you have email. Mark, anybody can. Mark with a K at marksalem, S-A-L-E-M, like the cigarettes, .com. Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much for that. Good luck, by the way. Al, you're up next. How can I help you, Al?
Good morning, Mark. Long-time listener, and I'm one of those gray-haired guys.
Good.
So What I'm considering, Mark, I'm looking around for a used pickup truck, GM, either a Chevy or a Sierra.
Okay.
What I'm running into is things that are in my price range. I'm looking $5,000 to $7,000. Something I'm not going to be using every day, just as an occasional pickup truck, half ton. Everything out there, as you know, trucks are incredibly high. Used trucks, price wise. Mm-hmm. And have an average of 150,000 miles.
Okay.
What are some of the things that, intelligent questions I should be asking the owner? Because, like I say, I'm an older guy. I'm very familiar with, if I was buying a 77 pickup truck, I would be confident. 97, a 2007, not so much.
Okay. Well, there's two things I think are most important. Number one, you're going to try to buy your truck from the original owner, and he's a guy like me that writes down every gas purchase, writes off every window blade, windshield wiper blade, every oil change. He has a little three-ring notebook where he's punched holes. Stop shaking your head. Stop shaking your head.
Mark, I'm that guy, too.
Okay. All right.
Repair orders and all that
you're gonna,
stuff.
That guy, boy, that his truck is – and number two, don't be afraid – what the guy with the trike that I bought, what did he start at?
Oh, I don't
Wasn't
know.
Wasn't it well over 40?
Probably.
Yeah. I was looking at a brand new three-wheel motorcycle trike, and the guy had done everything I would have wanted to do. He bought the motorcycle, and he shipped it to the maker. They put a trike system on it, and he wanted every dime that he had out of it. And he was an engineer for BMW, and you know how much I love engineers. All right. So, So we negotiate and you verify this. I said to you, I'm going to offer him 32. And what'd you say?
Yeah, he'll never take it.
And she says, you're an embarrassment to men. And she made fun of me and she did all this other stuff. And I called him up and I said to him, look, I understand that your truck's worth every bit, but this is my budget. I just want to make you an offer. And you know what? You know, you can just blow me off but I'm not trying to hurt your feelings or anything, but just 32 is all I got. And that's all I want to spend. So here's my name and phone number and, you know, whatever. Now, here, let me tell you though. I had already looked at the plates on this, and the plates were due that month. That means his insurance is due that month, too. So he's looking at his plates and his insurance. And now he's motivated. And what did he take, honey?
Yeah, I know.
What?
I'm not going to say you're right again, but okay.
Say it louder, though.
No. And what about a new car check for him?
Oh, no.
A lot of people will do that. They'll let you take it in somewhere.
So you're not going to say you were right, honey?
No.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So I bought the bike for 32, and I want you to develop that as well. I want you to make dumb offers. And you know what? On sometimes when I think I got a chance at this, I'm going to give them a 10-day. It expires in 10 days because I'm going to be looking, and I may make another offer. That puts a little pressure on them. So don't be afraid to make a low-ball offer. Frankly, I got to tell you, Al, I promise you, half of the horses I sell for a lot less than I ask, half of the cars and trucks I sell, I usually take a pretty significant discount. So, and so does everybody else. So everybody starts with what Mark Salem calls the dreamer price, and then they get down to reality. And under the best of conditions, you're going to buy it in the reality segment. So, and then used car checkover is absolutely, they take it to a shop that you picked, you pay for it, you get the response from the shop, and you leave the negotiations open until then. You say, it depends on what they find is what I'm going to pay. So at the end of the day, you say, you know, you have $237 worth of work that needs to be done right now that doesn't appear in your manual. So if you'll just do that work or give me a $237 credit, I'll buy your truck for my offer of whatever. That's right. How I would do it.
Right.
I think, and when you're done, like for me, how many hours did I spend on the trike and doing research and all that kind of stuff, and I saved myself an easy $7,000?
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm.
And so if I spent, let's say, 3 hours, look at the $7,000 divided by three. I've never made that kind of money before. So yeah. Same with you, okay?
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much, Al. All righty. Frank, you stay right there because you're next, I promise. 602-508-0960. We've got four lines available. Frank's got number one, and you can have number two, three, four, or five. We'll be right back right after this.
The mechanic raised up from under my
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Renee, my wife, and both of us have been in the car repair business for 32 years. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician and have been for 26 years.
Yeah, I think we've been longer than that because I think it's about 35. 1979?
No. Well, I was ASE Certified
before then. How long have you done auto repair?
32 years. 1979, however the math is, 21 and 16, whatever that is, 37
yeah.
years.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Fine. You want to correct me? I missed something for the last caller.
You did.
When Al asked me about buying a car, I never answered his question, which I look for, and you picked up on it. So go ahead, finish up.
Yeah, well, I would say do a Carfax on it for sure. And then, you know, we've had a lot in the news lately about all these floods and the rust and stuff, but maybe a body shop inspection as well. Usually our guys can see if there's a frame bent or something like that when we do used car inspections, but a body shop would be another good place to take it.
And the mechanical guy would pick up the flood damage because
right.
we look underneath the dash and stuff. That's where the mud comes up.
Right.
But the best part that you said was the Carfax. And Al, you need to do a Carfax. It's $20, $30, whatever it is, because people lie about being the original owners. Now, not too long ago, we had someone lie about being the original owners, and in fact, it was a rental car that had been sold at $40,000, and then this person owned it from $40,000 to $50,000, and now they were selling it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a negative if it's one of the major rental cars because they take very good care of their cars. They do everything exactly by the book. So I said to the consumer, this is a good car. Don't be afraid the fact that it was a rental car, because there's a small amount of rental cars that are abused by guys like me when we were younger.
Or smoking. That's the worst thing, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So she brings up a good point. Have the body shop check it over. But if the Carfax comes clean, mm-hmm. then we can basically be pretty doggone certain it's never been wrecked.
Right.
Okay. Let's talk about Thompson's Auto Repair real quick. Thompson's Auto Repair has been in business since 1970. They're on their third generations of owners and managers and technicians. They have been around Mesa since 1970. They have ASE certified technicians. They provide the highest level of automotive service, automotive diagnostics. And then they follow up with friendly reminders that let you know when your vehicle may be due for service. It's never been easier or more convenient to keep your car in tip-top shape. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, owned by Brian and Thelma, is located on Main Street just east of Stapley. So Main Street and Stapley just east on the south side of the road. Great place. Frank, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Yes, Mark, I have a 99 F-250 Super Duty. And what I just encountered the other day is I started up. It starts to run, and then all of a sudden it dies. And so I start it up again. It does that again. And it's never done anything like that before to me. I was just wondering, could it be fuel problems?
Well, is this gas or diesel?
No, this is a gas B10.
Okay. All right. This is how many miles are on it?
About 160,000.
Okay. This isn't going to be that hard. How many times do you start it and let it run before it finally catches and stays there?
Usually it starts up immediately.
Okay.
And run and continues to run.
I know, but in the cases when it starts and dies when it's cold, does it start and die like three times and on the fourth time it finally catches and holds?
No. This just started yesterday.
Okay.
It won't even run now.
Oh. Okay. All right. Well, that's an important part of this puzzle, buddy. That's important.
Right.
Okay. Here's what I would do. Do you usually run that tank at a quarter and higher or half and higher, or do you keep it on the top half or on the bottom half of the fuel tank?
Usually around a quarter and higher.
Okay. All right. The electric fuel pump is inside the fuel tank, and it's lubricated and cooled by the gas in the tank. When you run it down as low as a quarter, sometimes the fuel pump will not do well because, again, it's lubricated and cooled by the gas in the tank. So some portion of that fuel pump is going to be above a quarter tank. Now, if you've never done a fuel pump, then I'm going to bet my second to the last dollar that the fuel pump's bad. Here's how you can probably tell. You pull up the gas tank and put your ear next to the gas tank and have your wife just turn the key to the on position. If you hear a buzzing coming from the tank for 3 or 4 seconds and then it shuts off, that means the fuel pump's at least working. That means the relay's working. That means we got power and ground to the pump. Bingo. That's a good deal. But the pump can still be bad and not be developing the 40 pounds of pressure it needs to fire your fuel-injected motor. So once we do that, then I want you to cycle the key on, count to five, turn it off, just to the on position, not to the crank. On, count to five, off. I want you to do that 3 times, 4 times, 5 times. Then hit the key, and if it starts and runs and dies again, that tells me for sure that the fuel pump pressure is substandard, and that's what's causing your problem. But the fact that the fuel pump's humming in the tank is great news. Don't forget, 160,000 miles, you've been around the world 6 times with that electric fuel pump. You might hold the record for a electric fuel pump at 160,000 miles.
If you haven't done it. Have you done it?
Have you ever done the pump?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
No.
So you might hold the record, especially for an F car. So I'm teasing you, of course. Mm-hmm. But in your particular case, if you want to make sure the ignition system's okay, then get some propane. Take the ductwork off the air filter, stick your propane up inside there, count to the maybe 10 seconds of propane, have a fire extinguisher close by just in case the worst happens, and hit the key. And if it starts and runs for a second and dies, that means the ignition system is good. That means you're substandard in fuel pressure or fuel delivery, and we're done. Then all we need to do is run a pressure test, diagnose the pump as being bad, and then replace the pump. And in your F-250, you're probably going to be on the low side of 700 and on the high side 950. Depends on if they do the entire assembly that has the pump and the sending unit or whether they just do the pump only and whether the hitch has to be removed to access the pump or the dual exhaust has to be changed or moved to access the tank. So that's all iffies. So that's the reason why I'm 700 to 950, okay?
And fuel filter?
Fuel filter, here's the deal. Let me think out loud to you. Mm-hmm. The fuel filter, let me ask you this question, Frank. When you're driving before this happened, would that truck do 70, 80, 90 miles an hour when your wife was driving it?
Oh, no. No, I mean, I never get it over 70.
Okay, but all right, I'm just teasing you again. I'm trying to get you to blame your wife, Frank. Mm-hmm. At 70 miles an hour is the highest consumption of fuel and the highest supply necessary. If you have a fuel filter problem, it's going to substantially impact that, which means you'll do 61 but not 62. So I was looking for that kind of a story because people say, well, the fuel filter fixed my died problem and idle problem, and I say it can't. Because if the fuel filter is so plugged up that the engine won't idle, then you'll never do 5 miles an hour or 10 miles an hour or 20 miles an hour because the demand for fuel goes up. So because of that. But I think if you haven't had the fuel filter replaced in recent memory, then go ahead and do the filter while you do the pump. But I think the fuel pump is your problem. Thank you very much for calling, Frank. John, you stay right there because in 3 seconds I'm out of here, and we'll be back just right Let me see, 29.
I got
30 seconds left. I'm sorry. I made a mistake.
I just didn't know if it was good to do the fuel pump each time you did the fuel filter just to get the whole system kind of cleaned out.
You mean the other way around? Do the filter every time you do the pump. We'd like people to do that if they say, I don't know when the last time the filter was done. Yeah. We want to do it when we do the pump.
Yeah.
Most people don't know, but we're writing it on with a black magic marker so everybody knows. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 35 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Sorry for that delay. That was my fault. My system went down, and we had to retrain and reconnect, and it's all my fault, and I'm sorry about that. I want to remind you the phones are open, and Don is my next caller, but you can have one of four lines at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and that's because we're 960 on the AM dial. So let's go to Don. And then when we'll come back, we'll get some other business done. But, Don, thank you for holding as long as you have. What can I do for you?
Hi, sir. Hope you and your lady are having a good day. I have a question. You were an expert in motor oil.
Okay.
I just purchased the Lexus 2013 GS350. The manual says that I should run this thing on 0.5-weight oil. I've never heard of 0.5-weight oil, so I have to ask, number one, how critical is that, and how available is that?
I don't know how available it is, and I think you're going to figure that out pretty quick, but I think you're going to end up with either a 0.10 or a 0.20. I'm not pouring 0.5 weight at all. I'm not using that at all, and it's because I haven't had a call for it, so I'm kind of surprised about that. I want you to know that anything close to zero is by far the best oil for your car, and I'll tell you why. Put your hands together like you're praying and rub them back together, okay? That's your motor. Now, I want to get in there, and I want to do three things with motor oil. I want to carry the heat away, carry the trash away, and lubricate these touching, moving parts. You with me?
Yes, sir.
Am I better off with peanut butter or water? Okay?
You have to have some kind of oil lubricant.
Yeah. Exactly. Perhaps sewing machine oil would be in one that I could say. But the idea is that the thinner the oil, it flows like a 0.8 when it's cold. That's what it means. It flows like a 0.8 when it's low. It flows like a 5.8 when it's hot. But the issue is let's get the oil in to these caverns that are 1 to 2 thousandths big, which is about half the size of a normal hair, human hair. So let's get in there. Now, peanut butter is going to get in there, and it's going to bake, and it's going to oxidize, and it's going to take forever to get out. But water's going to go in, pick up the heat, pick up the trash, provide lubrication, and get the heck out of Dodge. So don't be afraid of the 0.5s, the 0.10s, and the 0.20s. I want you to read your manual again to make sure that 0.5 isn't -30 to a +30 arena, and then they go from +30 to 100 or 120 degrees, might be a 0.10 or a 0.20. So just make
sure. I read the manual in several places. It said use 0.5. As a matter of fact, it said that if I, for any reason, have to put some other oil in it, that as soon as I can, I should drain the oil and put 0.5 in it.
Okay. I don't buy that. No major oil company says that. I think that's Toyota's way to keep you in their stable. It's like in the years of 70s and 80s when they said you can only use a Toyota oil filter. And of course, today we know that that's not true either. So I would start by just visiting a couple of – or calling a couple of parts stores around you and ask them if they've got 0.5 and ask them this. Is it conventional? Is it a blend, which is half conventional, half synthetic, or is it a synthetic? Does your manual call for a synthetic, a 0.5 synthetic?
I don't recall whether it said synthetic or not. It just said 0.5.
Okay. You might find it in a conventional, and the difference between the three is simple. The conventional is a 3 to 5,000 mile oil change interval. The semi-synthetic is going to move that from 3 to 5 to 5 to 7, and then a synthetic is going to go 8 to 10. So if they call for a 0.5 and they call for a 10,000 mile oil change, I'm telling you right now that's a synthetic. So
okay.
You'll have to find that. But I still think, I mean, I I'm not going to tell you to damage your motor, but I'm going to tell you I am 99% sure nothing will ever happen if you can only find a 010 or a 020. You'll be fine. Okay?
Okay, sir. Okay. Right. Thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Don. Thank you for waiting. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more, and you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. But let me tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange real quick. He's been around since 1968. Phil and his staff are transmission diagnostic experts, repair experts, test driving experts. They do transmission repairs, replacements, and Phil will say that very few cars need an overhaul. Almost always on a car from 96 and newer, it's going to be a problem with an input or an output or a pressure problem or some kind of the speedometer's lying about how fast you're going so the transmissions are not shifting right. Once we fix the speedometer, the transmission will shift right. Phil is really good, and every transmission that he does build will meet or exceed the specifications of the transmission you have in your car. Every transmission is thoroughly tested on their new state-of-the-art dynamometer. So if you live in Central Phoenix, 40th Street in Washington area, you'll know when you drive by that Automatic Transmission Exchange has been there for a very long time. And now they're open on Saturdays, 8 to 2, for your convenience. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Renee is sitting here next to me. She's my cohort in crime. We've owned our businesses. We've decided now 37 years mm-hmm. in the car repair business. And I think we are, with the exception of Chapman Chevrolet in Tempe, mm-hmm. we are the oldest auto repair facility under the same management in the entire city of Tempe. There was some guys that were before us that were great guys. Al Kitts right. was one of them. Ronnie's was one of them. Jack Harris at the Chevron station was one of them. There was a lot of good guys, but yeah. they've all retired. But right. I think we're the longest in Tempe of anybody. And, of course, we'll hear if we aren't, won't
That's
we?
That's right. We okay. will.
All right. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. They're located at I-17 in Deer Valley. Action Auto Repair is a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that served the Deer Valley and the North Phoenix area since 1983. Tom and his guys know how to fix cars. They're well-known for quality workmanship, excellent customer service, and a fast turnaround time, and they have ASE Master certified technicians. So they want to help you as vehicle owners understand what they're doing and why so you can make the best decisions for you. That's Action Auto Repair at I-17 and Deer Valley Road. Paul, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning?
You had a 2006 Ford F-250 6.0 diesel with 400,000 miles on it.
Wow.
It's highly maintained.
Okay.
I've got fuel in the radiator. I know it's the heads. It's probably a crack in those cups that hold the injectors. Who would you recommend in town to rebuild those heads?
Well, I think you're wrong.
And would it be worth it?
I think you're wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
There are lots of places for leaks in your motor.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think you should be bidding head work, pulling the heads off this, because I think that's going to open the door for somebody to take advantage of you.
Okay.
You have fuel in the water, right?
Right.
So fuel in the cooling system. There's two guys I want you to call and talk to. I want you to call and talk to David at Southwest Diesel.
Okay.
He is a wizard. He knows more about Cummins than anybody I know, but he also knows about the Ford. And then I want you to call my son, Alan. And Alan, and then just talk to both of them, because they are both, and Alan is really good with the Fords. We had our own Ford in just the other day, and we had a problem that it wouldn't start hot. And, I mean, we had the top end of that motor apart three times, and we found two bare wires touching one another underneath the sheath. And that was an amazing find for my guys. We were pretty proud of them. But Alan, he'll talk to you for free. And his number, what number should we give him? The 602 number?
I don't have a way to write it down right now.
Okay. But, that's okay. Email me at mark@marksalem.com, and I'll give you both of their phone numbers and their names. And
okay.
and there's lots of places that water and fuel are next to one another, and I suggest that pulling the heads is the last place we're going to look. I think there's
the
other places. That last place we're going to look.
Okay.
So
now, the only work I've done on this truck is I replaced the EGR cooler with an aftermarket one with an outfit here in town. You probably know who they are.
Okay.
And their whole oil system and a high-pressure oil pump when I had that done.
Okay.
And
that's different because EGR, what's happening – well, there's an oil cooler in there and an EGR cooler.
Right.
And the EGR cooler is we have exhaust gas next to coolant. That causes a problem.
Right.
And then on the oil cooler, we end up with an oil leak in the intake, and we have coolant in the oil. You say you have fuel.
I got fuel.
Okay. And that might be fuel-laden oil that you're smelling, and it might be oil, engine oil.
With the inside oil cooler, it has been replaced with the outside cooler system.
Okay. And that's where water and coolant meet. And if you pull the dipstick and smell it, the question then becomes, does it smell like you think it should smell, or does it smell like fuel? Because it's going to be hard to look in the cooling system to determine whether it's engine oil or diesel fuel. Uh-huh. That's going to be hard.
Okay.
So that's what I do. The two best guys, I'll give you the information when you send me an email, all right?
All right. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And Jimmy, you're up next. Jimmy, how can I help you today?
Hello, Mark. Yes, I have a 2004 Dodge Ram. It's a two-wheel drive. It has a 360 motor in it. And I'm having a problem I've had for quite some time. When I fill the gas tank full and I get in and I leave and as soon as I get to the stop sign, the truck stalls.
Okay. When you fill it up, do you click it 2, 3, 4 times?
No, I do not.
Okay. And then it just stalls once and it doesn't do it again after that?
Not until I use some of the gas, you know, it seems to go away after
that. All right. And when you fill it up, is the nozzle on slow, medium, or fast?
I usually, you know, hook that thing and let it do its thing on its own.
Okay.
You know, I don't physically hold it.
All right. It sounds like that we're flooding the tank and we're pushing a bunch of raw fuel into the canister, and then it's running rich, and that's why it's dying. And typically...
Just does it that once and twice, maybe, and that's it.
Well, and I understand that. If you want to diagnose this, then I want you to run it on low. If you're going to put it on automatic, put it on low. And just watch the gauge. And when the gauge gets up to just between 3/4 and full, I want you to shut it off, and I want you to go drive it. And I want you to say that when I don't fill the tank up all the way, everything is fine. And when I fill the tank up all the way, everything is not fine. Then you've just saved yourself $100 worth of diagnostic time, because now all we have to do is find out if that check valve on the top of the tank is working or not.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah,
just
I do have one more question, if
okay.
I could.
Okay, go ahead.
I've never had the transmission serviced. Everything's working fine. I'm just wondering if you recommend a service. You know, I've heard horror stories that once they start servicing it, you have problems with it.
All right. How many miles are on it?
110.
Okay. Well, first of all, when it was in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s when that was true. It's not true anymore. Okay? It's not true in the year 2000 and north of 2000. It's not true that once you service an old unit and you put new fluid in there and the new fluid goes in there and rinses out all that cholesterol in the veins and it plugs the pump and it wipes out the transmission.
Simmer down.
That doesn't happen. So, but I still am an advocate of this. I think you should pull the pan and do 4 of the 10 quarts and the filter. And then I think you should wait 6 months and go in for a full flush so we can get all the fluid out of it. I am going to put you at ease. I'm going to take 4 of the 10 quarts. I'm going to mix and match. And then I'm going to bring you back in 6 months later and flush the whole thing. You'll be fine.
Okay.
But I'm going to do that just because I think you're going to like that better.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go to a regular transmission place for this, correct?
Okay, or any general repair shop that has a flush machine. We all know how to pull the pan and filter. You have a filter that hasn't been changed in 100-some-odd thousand miles. We need to get that filter out of there and put a new one in, and then we need to change all the fluid, which is something that should have been done before 100,000 miles. But any general repair can handle that. The filter and replacement of the filter and the fluid is going to be about 200.
Yeah.
The flush is about 200.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have $400 worth of repair bills. My suggestion is in 1 year. Do one, now, and then 6 months later, do the other, and you'll be home free. And depending on the quality of the fluid, you'll be set for another 60 to 75,000 miles.
Yeah. And that's probably what you would have spent if you would have done it when you should have.
Say that again?
Yeah. I said I travel across country every year, so.
Okay. All right. Well, are you pulling anything when you're traveling?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I wouldn't change my recommendations to you. Filter and fluid first. Filter in 4 quarts or 3 quarts first. 6 months later, do a flush, and I think you'll be in good shape. Thank you very much,
okay,
Jimmy.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Yeah, it's kind of a wives' tale. You'll still get a couple of old guys every once in a while that say, now, Mark, I've seen that happen, but they can't tell you when and where and stuff like that. I haven't seen it, and we have a whole lot of cars that we do that kind of service on. Rob, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
Good morning, Mark. Hey, I've got a 2006 Ford Explorer with the V8 engine in it.
Okay.
I have been impressed for the first 100,000, maybe 110. I was getting 18, 19 miles a gallon, pretty much average driving around town with, the normal highway time and so on. It was always 18 to 19. Now in the last 10, 12,000 miles, it's dropped down to about 15 miles per gallon.
Okay.
Is this just a car getting old and forget those wonderful mileage rates I used to be getting? Or
no.
Is there anything that...
Have you put spark plugs in it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yep. Did you put a single platinum or a double platinum? Did you put another 100,000-mile spark plug in it?
I can't answer that question. I'd have to check my records.
Okay. Because that's what needed to happen between 90 and 100,000 miles is you needed to put a comparable spark plug in there. Another thing is we're going to look at fuel trim. So we're going to plug in not our code readers, but our scanners, and we're going to look at your fuel trim. And maybe the fuel trim says 50%. I'm just going to use numbers that you're going to understand better. 50% fuel trim, that's perfect. And if it's on the low side, if it's 60% or 70%, that means something quite different than 30% or 40%. So we're looking at fuel trim, we're looking at fuel trim numbers, we're looking at O2 sensor readings, we're looking at all that kind of stuff, we're looking at fuel pressure, we're going to make sure the throttle blades are clean, and we're going to clean the mass airflow sensor. And those are two things that have, if they've not been done, and if you wanted to make an intelligent guess based on Mark Salem's experience, cleaning up the mass airflow sensor and cleaning up the throttle blades would probably, 70% of the time, that will give you back the fuel economy that you've documented that you've lost. And, okay. And there's going to be three that I'm going to raise it to 90%. Spark plugs, mass airflow sensor, and throttle blades. Those are really important that those be serviced at around the 100,000-mile mark. And if we don't do all three, then we're not going to give you everything that we can give you.
2 minutes.
Let me tell you about the mass airflow sensor just real quick. The mass airflow sensor is this little bitty wire that tells the computer how much air the engine is sucking in, how much air the engine is breathing. So a little bit of air is a little bit of fuel. A whole bunch of air is a whole bunch of fuel. Get the relationship? How about if I take that little guy who's standing there, let's assume naked, and he's telling you how much air is going past him. How about if I bundle him up in 14 jackets and 14 pairs of pants and then put 10 hoods on him, on his head? He can't feel the air. So he's going to lie about the air. And when we lie about the air, we lie about the fuel. And so those two are directly related. So when we clean the mass airflow sensor, there's this little bitty wire. If you mess that wire up, you just cost yourself $100 to $250. The technicians know how to do that. And they know if it's dirty when they look at it. So they say, yeah, that thing's all fuzzed up. Looks like a caterpillar. Yep, I can fix that. And you're going to get better fuel economy. or, nope, I'm not going to do it. I shined a flashlight or I took it out. I looked at it. It's as clean as a whistle. I'm not cleaning it up. That's what it's all about. I got to go. So, but I want to tell you, Rob, my email address, I know you had one more question, is mark@marksalem.com. If you'll give me your phone number, I'll probably call you back on a blocked line because I use my cell phone a lot. And for obvious reasons, my cell phone is blocked. For the rest of you, if you send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, the same goes to you. I have questions a lot of times, so I have to call you back or I have to email you back. It's easier for me just to call you. But if you give me a number, if I come through as a blocked call, then you can pick it up and I say, I am Mark Salem. I'm returning your call, and that way you don't have to hang up on me because I got nothing to sell you. Thanks for spending your Saturday with me. Thank you very much. Wear your seatbelt. God bless you, and I'll see you next Saturday right here on 960.